Well, here we are talking about stuff. Now, if you want a less canonical sermon on stuff, I strongly recommend to you George Carlin, who has a great bit on stuff. There are two of them out there. One's bluer than the other, because there are other words for stuff, and he is not above using them. But if you're curious, it's worth your time, and it's very funny. So, what do we do with stuff? And what is stuff, anyway, is a weird sermon title in some ways. But what I'm trying to get at, and as I'm sure you've already figured out, or at least got a pretty good idea, is this is kind of what we're dealing with in Ecclesiastes. It's also what we're dealing with in our gospel lesson. But Ecclesiastes is quite an enjoyable book in some ways. Don't read it if you're in the midst of a significant depression. You might not survive. But it's filled with good things. There's another crossover with Einstein and Solomon. Neither one of them knew how to treat their wives. The real braininess and good behavior don't always go together, which is not terribly surprising. So let's talk about stuff. And the simple answer in this case is it's the things that we have. It's the things that are physically tangible as well as those that aren't. Our reputation is in that whole big sort of bag of stuff. And if our stuff is in our sort of around us, what do we do with it? Well, Solomon, who began life with a silver spoon in his mouth, they used such utensils back then went on and tried to figure out what the world meant and how it worked and all that, and he does all of these things, and he comes to the conclusion that work, toil, just makes you anxious and miserable, and it doesn't make any sense. Depending on the translation, whether it's a New Living like Bev read, which is quite interesting, the New International says, all his days, his work is pain and grief, even at night, his mind does not rest. This too is meaningless. I hope that's not the experience of anyone, but it may have been at one point or another, when your work sort of just takes over your mind. You can't fall asleep, you're worried about it all the time. That's where your stuff is creeping in on you. Because the thing about your possessions, your stuff, is that it's a two-way street if you're not careful. If you don't keep an eye on what your possessions are and what they do for you and what they mean, they will possess you. And I suspect all of us have come across at least one person, perhaps we've even struggled with it ourselves, where the things of life have somehow become more important, not just than what we think is important, but what that person thinks. I've talked to all kinds of people who, over the years, because of the positions I've been in various places, who talk about how important family is, but spend more time at work than they're getting paid for. Because their reputation at work means that much to them. And it's they're holding these two conflicting things in their minds, which we all do now and then. It's called cognitive dissonance, and all of us live with it to some extent. And on the one hand, they're saying, my family is the most important thing. And on the other, they're saying, but I'm going to go to work rather than be with them when I don't have to be at work. And it's not that that makes this particular person, because I'm thinking of one in particular, it doesn't mean that they're evil, because they're not. It just means that they're not examining the life that they're living. And they're holding on to conflicting things, which never makes us happy. We can sort of live with them for a period of time, but eventually they start to spill over, and that's when we need to start talking to people about what's going on. That's when therapy can be really useful, to try and figure out what is it that is clashing inside of ourselves. And often, it's a clash between what we value, not just what we say we value, but what we actually value, and things. Because things are important. Trying to live without things is impossible. You know, I can't get here if I don't have something to drive any more than you can and all that. I mean, I'm not here to tell you that possessions are wrong, because that's certainly not the case. But we need to keep them where they actually belong. The story in Luke that Jesus tells is really interesting to me, because it reminds me of lots of people that I've known over the years. Apparently, I've known lots of people with weird problems, but you listen long enough and you just hear things. And what this is, I haven't heard it exactly like this, but what I've heard is people who are continuing to work so that they might retire into the good life. And good, that's wonderful, you should. That's part of how our culture works. You work, you pay into a pension, whatever it might be, and then you retire at the appropriate time, and then you do other things rather than work. And these people have given lip service to that, but they've lost sight of the second half of that. And they just keep working and working and working until they die. Or until they're so unwell that they're forced to stop working and they can't travel, if that's what they said they wanted to do. They can't finally get around to writing that book they've always wanted to, or to do those things, because work has taken over to such an extent that there's no room for anything else. And that's what we're seeing if we expand this parable a little bit. You have a fully successful farmer. He's done well. And instead of, because there's more than one option here. His granaries are full, and he has more grain. And to him, his only option is to find bigger granaries for more of them. What would have happened if he would have looked at this incredible bounty he had and given it away? Or for that matter, if giving it away is just too much of a stretch for him, if he would have loaned it to people, if he would have done something else with it to connect with the community. But what we see here is somebody who is entirely self-oriented, in that his stuff needs to continue being his stuff. He's a hoarder. It's just, instead of having piles of newspapers and magazines in a grotty apartment, he looks like a prosperous farmer, because that is what he is. And what Jesus says in this parable, among other things, is piling up stuff for later. Think about that, because later might not happen, or later might be now. And this doesn't mean that you should take everything you have and spend it all the time. Jesus isn't talking about that. I was trained when I was taking classes and things that a parable only makes one point, which it doesn't, because Jesus tells some of his parables make more than one point. But still, there's usually a primary point. And the primary point in this one is, don't let your stuff take over your life to such an extent that you lose sight of what it is when it suddenly becomes your life. Being owned by your own possessions is a terrible thing, because your possessions never give back once they own you. And they're never enough either. People for whom possessions are the measure of their value always need more, because you can never have enough. I mean, we're seeing this now in our culture, where people have considerably more than enough, and it's they keep going. I mean, that's, like somebody said, that's the philosophy of a cancer cell, is to just keep going until finally everything's gone. And we're seeing that in some of our business people and some other things. And it's because the idea of possessions and things has consumed them in some way that says, I need to have more. Well, what if more doesn't gain you anything? What if more doesn't extend your life or make your life better? An interesting thing to do is, when you talk to people about when they were happiest, often they'll tell you it was when they were first married, or they first moved out, they first were on their own, and they were first figuring out who they were. And it doesn't mean they're not happy now. I'm not talking about people who, you know, peaked at high school or something like that, because that's always unfortunate. But get people to talk about, you know, when have you been really happy? And often, it's when they had nothing but each other. And I'm kind of like that as well. The early days of being married, we were penniless students, in debt to the government with student loans and all the rest of it. And yet we still had people in because we somehow managed to always have food. And I look back on those days as some really wonderful days. Didn't have a tenth of what we've got now. And it's not that I'm unhappy now, but my happiness doesn't come from the things that I've got. And I had to learn that the hard way by having God set fire to my house. I put it that way just so the lesson I learned comes a little bit more clear. Your house on fire clarifies a lot of things for you. And for me, it clarified that the only thing that really mattered were living things. It was winter, so I put on a coat before I collected my youngest brother and the dog, and then we walked out, because that's all that really mattered. I hope nobody else has a house fire. They're really a pain. Ours was better than most, and they're just really aggravating. But it helped me see that the quality of my life is not measured in the things that I have. And that's one of the things that Paul talks about to the church at Colossae and in other places, where he talks about don't let the love of money, for example, get in the way of what actually matters. Because at the end of things, when you talk to people or you read books or articles about people who have regrets at the end of their life, it's almost never about the things that they didn't buy. It's the time that they didn't spend with people that they loved. Like somebody said, there's never a trailer behind a hearse. When we're gone, we're gone. We don't take anything with us. So piling up stuff at the expense of the joy that we have with people seems kind of crazy. Haley has completed her move to her new place in Moose Jaw. And yesterday also with Jasper, turned 29. I'm not sure how that happened. I closed my eyes for a moment and suddenly they're 29. So we were at her new place with her fiancé to have a birthday party and all that. That matters. That was worth making time for. That was something that I will remember for a long time, that cost me nothing and in one sense gained me nothing. And for all of you, I'm guessing that's the same way that you are. As Eileen celebrates her birthday today, I'd be surprised if Eileen's looking back at all the things she's owned. That just doesn't seem to be the idea. I just don't see Eileen sitting down and saying, well, it's my birthday. I've been very successful. I have owned all of these things. No, Eileen has had a wonderfully successful life because of how much she's loved her family and loved her church. And I'm sure other ways, but those are the ways I've seen. And I look at that as a successful life. And there's no stuff in that picture, is there? When we think of the joyful moments in our lives, even when we think of that Christmas that we got the bicycle or whatever it was that we really wanted, was that the only thing that made that a wonderful day? Or was it that your parents had listened carefully to you and had gotten you exactly what you needed or wanted and strengthened that relationship? We have stuff. And that's okay. But we need to keep it where it belongs. And we need to remember that not only are we not measured by the amount of money we have in the bank or the size of our house or anything else, but those are the things that if they're suddenly taken away, won't really make a difference. Although, in some ways they will. I don't want to minimize that. I don't want to suggest that we all become poverty-stricken or something like that. But if I came to you one Sunday and said, oh, by the way, they foreclosed on my house and I'm living with one of my kids, you'd say that's terrible. You wouldn't say you're terrible. Because the things that we have don't make us who we are, at least not entirely. When I look back at the life I've led, the pursuit of things has never helped me, ever. It's gotten me in a lot of trouble, and I've heard that's happened to other people as well. The things that have made me who I am today, the things I'm proud of, all revolve around people. When I've had the opportunity to help people understand things better, when I've been there just to quietly listen as they've told me their story because they needed to tell it again, all of those things have nothing to do with stuff. But those are the things that I look at that make my life of value. And I see very much the same in you. I don't see people who are just waiting for the next house, the next car. I see people who are waiting for the next time to be with their family, next time they can hang out with friends, next time they can go to a football game, go to a hockey game, go watch their kids play, their grandkids play, or whatever it is. The people involved are what make our lives worth living. Because one of the things that Solomon discovered at the end of everything is that nothing matters that you can pick up and count, if you will. And he doesn't take the next step to say that what does matter are the relationships you build along the way, particularly with that relationship that you can have with God through Jesus, empowered by the Holy Spirit, as one of the many enriching relationships that you have. What to do with stuff? Keep it in its proper place. The stuff we have are tools to help us be better and to help other people. And if we keep them there where they're supposed to be, then we won't have problems with them, and we will own them, and they won't own us. Amen.